The Philadelphia District Attorney's Office takes in millions of dollars each year through civil forfeiture, though many aspects of the practice are little known, including how the DA's office spends the money it generates. Investigative journalist Isaiah Thompson has reported extensively on this topic and joins me now with developments that may shed light on this far from transparent process. Isaiah, thanks for joining us again on NewsWorks Tonight.
Thanks for having me back.
The development comes in the form of a class action federal civil rights lawsuit filed this month. What are the allegations?
Right. So there's been a federal class action lawsuit filed by the Institute for Justice, which is a libertarian-leaning civil liberties organization, as well as with a local civil rights law firm, Mr. David Radofsky. If I can back up a little bit, the district attorney's office uses this process called civil forfeiture. And this is a legal process outside of the normal criminal process by which they can seize property that is supposedly linked to crime. So this might be cash, it might be vehicles, and it might be real estate, people's houses. Because this is a civil process, there is actually no need for the district attorney's office to prove or even allege criminal allegations. So what's happening is that the district attorney's office seizes millions of dollars worth of property every year, often before proving any criminal charge and sometimes without any criminal charge in the first place.
Now, this process, though, is not unique to Philadelphia. It's conducted by municipal, state, and federal authorities throughout the land.
Yeah, this is something that's happening all over the United States. And in fact, it seems to be growing and growing every year.
Is Philadelphia particularly egregious, though?
Yeah, I think that the way the district attorney's office does forfeiture here is unique, or at least almost unique. The DA here files thousands of cases against cash seized by police officers on the street, sometimes in an arrest, but sometimes not in an arrest. And they also fairly uniquely attempt to seize the houses of people in which a drug crime usually has been alleged to occur. Now, in some cases, these might be what we think of as real nuisance properties, houses where drugs are being dealt regularly, that kind of thing.
And indeed, that's the contention of the DA's office.
Not always. I mean, in many cases, for example, in the case of one of the plaintiffs in this lawsuit, you have a family that was living in a house. Their son admittedly committed a single act of drug dealing. It was his first offense. He's in a diversion program of some sort. And the district attorney's office attempted to seize the house on the premise that the house itself was an instrument of crime.
So it's a pretty broad interpretation.
It's a very broad interpretation. It's maybe the broadest interpretation, at least when it comes to real estate, to people's homes, anywhere in the United States.
And does the class action lawsuit pertain to this broad interpretation of due process?
That's part of it. Basically, the class action lawsuit is arguing that the entire way the district attorney's office pursues forfeiture violates the 14th Amendment rights of due process when it comes to the people whose property has been seized. And a big part of the lawsuit talks about the way that this process works. So people responding to a forfeiture lawsuit will report to this other courtroom, and there's really no judge there. There's sort of an administrative judge. But essentially, the district attorneys run the entire courtroom as if it was some kind of city office rather than appearing in a court setting. No judge will really hear the merits of this case, at least not for a long time. And people who want to keep their property are forced to return over and over and over again. I actually found in my first analysis of this that those who attempted to fight for their property, because many do not, many simply will not show up and will lose their property on the first quote-unquote hearing. Those who do return will spend an average of 260 days returning over and over again, often monthly, to court to try and get their property back.
I'm sure many listeners hearing this are thinking that it turns on its head the notion of innocent till proven guilty. Who are the defendants besides the DA's office?
The city has also been sued, and the Philadelphia Police Department has also been sued, since they're all three different parts of this machine. I mean, the police usually seize the property in question, or in the case of houses, it's usually narcotics officers who have sort of recommended that this house be pursued for forfeiture.
Though by law, assets recovered through civil forfeiture are not allowed to go toward satisfying the budget requirements.
Right. There's a real irony here, which is that for reasons that are pretty straightforward, you don't want to directly incentivize a district attorney's office or the police department, which shares that money, to pursue more forfeiture simply to pad their budget or increase their budget. So they're not allowed to budget for this income. But the truth is that it represents a huge amount of income. Last year, the DA's office brought in about $5 million through this program. That's a lot of money. That's a substantial portion of the DA's budget.
What does the DA's office say by way of response? Have they responded to the class action suit yet?
They've responded in various press interviews. They haven't responded in the lawsuit yet. You know, the DA's office argues that this program is a way of depriving criminals of their assets, and it's also a way of abating nuisances. And I think that that is often the case. There are certainly, you know, houses in this city that are being used for crime, and there are certainly criminals in this city who probably should have their assets taken away from them. But when it comes to questions of guilt and innocence, you know, the DA's office argues correctly that the law allows them to pursue this stuff before actually proving a criminal charge. So I think the question is not so much a legal one there, but an ethical one. You know, do we feel as a city and as a society that that's proper to take people's property away without proving that they actually did something criminal with it? Another thing that the district attorney's office has been saying, especially when it comes to the case of homes being seized and pursued for forfeiture, is that, you know, they say that they don't want to take people's homes and that they will try and get a settlement agreement rather than seize the house, and that they work with the people whose homes are involved. You know, and I think that there's something a little bit disingenuous about the claim that they are working with the very people that they are suing. It is true that most of the cases involving people's homes do not result in the house being taken away. At the same time, the district attorney's office does seize about 100 houses a year, and people who are going through this process are forced to return over and over again, sometimes as long as a year or 2 years. These are often working people for whom it's very difficult to come to court. They're not given a free lawyer, and so if they want representation, they'll have to pay for it. And the idea that this is a kind of symbiotic, cooperative process is, I think, not true. I mean, it's an adversarial legal process in which people are facing the loss of their home.
Is the lawsuit asking for amending or dismantling the process?
It's pretty fascinating. The lawsuit is asking for all property seized to be returned. It's asking for the process to essentially be shut down. Should these things happen, it would be quite a drastic outcome. But I think that one thing it certainly has done, it has drawn attention not just here in the city, but really nationally to what's going on here. And I think that we're already seeing a debate that wasn't being had before starting to come out, and I think we're going to see more of that.
And as your work has shed light on this for some 2 years now, I need to ask, are you surprised that it has taken this long to generate this level of awareness?
You know, I was extremely surprised to discover the magnitude of this operation, this machine, as the lawsuit calls it, and as I called it in my writing. I was very surprised to find out the extent to which this was going on in Philadelphia and the extent to which the public was largely unaware of it. I am less surprised that it's taken this long for this lawsuit to come about, because I think that this is an issue that people don't really know about, that they don't necessarily understand. And I think it's taken a while for public awareness to kind of catch up with what's been going on largely behind closed doors.
We are, some say, in the twilight of Mayor Nutter's career. Do you think that mayoral candidates would be appropriately asked about this and have to respond, or is it under the radar in terms of the prioritization of what people will be voting for them based on?
I think part of the reason that this got so little attention for so long is that most people don't think about property being seized from people by police as being really an important issue. I think there's a presumption of guilt. Very often there is guilt, and there very often are criminal charges. However, I think the other part of this story, the fact that the district attorney's office is seizing the homes of people who have committed no crime at all, that is something that I think does register with the general public, and I think that that's something that may draw a lot more scrutiny.
As an investigative journalist, are you on to something else, or are you still involved actively in this issue?
I do think that there are some new avenues to pursue with this issue. And one thing that I think is important to think about is, you know, recently, just a few weeks ago, we saw the indictment of 6 Philadelphia narcotics officers. These are exactly the same kind of officers who were, by and large, bringing in these forfeiture cases. So I think that something to look at now now that we're reviewing the way that narcotics officers sort of operate in the city of Philadelphia is there a connection between how these officers have been doing their jobs, maybe even the ones who were indicted, and the kind of forfeiture cases that have been brought into the district attorney's office?
Is the commonality, would you suggest, a lack of oversight or a lack of structure that allows these kinds of rogue operations to take place? Although in the case of the DA's office, it's not really rogue actors, it's an entire office.
I think that the main thing that I learned about the way that civil forfeiture happens in Philadelphia is that it happens very quickly and it often happens with minimal oversight. Now that it's been revealed that we've had, allegedly corrupt narcotics police officers, not just one, not just two, but many of them operating in the city, I think maybe it's time to review how quickly these cases are just moved through the system, especially when they're being brought in by the same kinds of officers, and indeed, in many cases, I believe the same officers, who are now facing indictment.
Isaiah, I'm sure we'll have you back as this process continues to play out, shedding light on this notion of civil forfeiture in Philadelphia. Thanks for joining us on NewsWorks Tonight.
Thanks for having me.
That's investigative journalist Isaiah Thompson.